Welcome to Behind the Prop Podcast, where each week we will bring you stories, lessons, and some tips from behind the prop. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pre-show checklist, microphones.
Check.
Sound check.
Complete.
Recording all channels.
Checked and verified.
Pre-show checklist complete. Tower, Bravo Tango Papa is holding short, ready for departure.
Bravo Tango Papa, you are clear for takeoff. Have a great show.
You're clear for takeoff and Wilco. Bravo, Tango Papa.
What's up, Wally?
Hey, Bobby, how are you?
I'm great. This is a special episode for both of us. I think probably for any aviator, one of the days that we all remember the most is that first time we soloed. This week is all about the first solo.
Absolutely. Today's a very historic day in our country, December 7th, and we all... can probably remember the speech, December 7th, 1941, a day that lives in infamy. And this isn't about that, but this happens to be the 39th anniversary of my first solo flight. I soloed on December 7th, 1981. I took off on runway 4 at 9:17 a.m. in Tomahawk 2549 Alpha in Monroe, Louisiana. And obviously that date resonates with me because of that. I don't remember the date of my private pilot check ride. I don't remember the dates of any of my check rides, really. But this is a date that resonates with me. And in fact, next year, 2021, on December 7th, I plan to be in Monroe, and I want to coordinate with air traffic control. And I want to recreate it. I want to, 40 years to the day, I want to take off on runway 4 at 9:17 in the morning. And just something I want to do for me. So that'll be a year from now.
That'll be awesome. And if which I know we will be doing the show at that point, we will probably be live on the runway while Wally does that on Facebook or something, and let everybody watch Wally recreate that with live audio of his 40-year anniversary. My first solo was July 12th, 2015, and not quite 40 years ago, but I remember that day vividly. I remember telling my instructor for probably a week or so that I'm not ready and you're not going to get out of this aircraft. He kept talking about, you know, we're getting close. And I knew I could land the plane, but I just didn't feel like I didn't have the confidence. Like, what if, right? Was probably what was going through my mind. I'm a little bit of a worst case scenario guy sometimes. So I actually flew over to Brenham with my instructor. We ate lunch with my dad, who lives in Brenham. Normal, great, beautiful day at the Brenham Airport and the Brenham Diner there. And we miss you, Brenham Diner. And flying back, he's like, today's the day. We're going to get back, and I'm going to get out of the plane. And I'll never forget that, you know, 25-minute flight in a 172 from Brenham. I was like, oh, my hands were sweating. I was getting nervous. I kind of wish he would have told me after we were on the ground. But we talked through it. We got back to the pattern. We flew the three laps with him in the aircraft with me, and I'll never forget. We kind of pulled up to the triangle. He got out and walked away, and here it was, go time. And I have that video on YouTube. I'll put it in the show notes and make sure you guys can watch it. It was a big day. I'll never forget. I've probably never talked more than I talked in that cockpit that day, and any other flight to date. It was every airspeed, everything I was doing with my hands, every turn I was. I was definitely in go mode for sure.
I was the same way. I do remember talking to myself. Again, mine was a long time ago. It was before everybody had cameras or phones in their pocket, and obviously before social media and all that stuff. So mine was a little bit lower key. There wasn't all the fanfare behind it. I remember that day. I don't remember the day of the week, but it was either a Monday, a Wednesday, or a Friday. And I know that because at 10 o'clock that day, I had an aerodynamics class, Aviation 301 aerodynamics, and I had a 8:30 or an 8 o'clock flight with my instructor, and he did not allude to me at all that I might solo this day. Obviously, I had all my medical and all that stuff, but I remember staying in the pattern with him, and then he said, "Okay, let's taxi in," and I kind of remember thinking, "Well, we've only done about 3 landings. Why are we going in?" And he said, "Keep the engine running, and go do 2 touch and goes, and on a full stop." And I don't think I had enough time to get nervous. I just remember getting out to the end of the runway and taking off, and probably at about 300 feet, I looked over at the fuel gauges, and I realized I probably had about 3 hours worth of fuel. And I just remember thinking to myself, okay, I've got 3 hours before I really have to put this airplane on the ground, worst case scenario. And of course I stayed in the pattern and did the touch and goes. I do remember air traffic control at Monrosa Controlled Airport, Class Delta, I do remember them giving me right-hand patterns, and I'm not sure I had ever done that, quite honestly. And I just remember thinking, oh, wow, well, I just turned right instead of turning left. And obviously, it worked out just fine, and I came back in, and I got out of the airplane, and nobody was there to meet me. I went into the flight school, and I paid my bill, and I drove to school, and I went to aerodynamics class. There was no big fanfare. When I became an instructor, we did a little bit more fanfare. We did some of the traditions that we're going to talk about here in a little while, the cutting of the shirt tail and all that kind of stuff. But I think about that day a lot. It was just one of the a very proud day for me, and it's obviously a very proud day for any student pilot to solo the first time.
Yeah, I looked it up on the internet. That was a Monday. And the other big thing that happened that day was Spain became a member of NATO. So you'll probably never forget that either.
Okay.
We've probably all had different experiences, whether we knew, and maybe as a flight school owner, I see people that come in, they think the day's the day, and maybe the winds prevent it, maybe the ceilings prevent it, maybe the first 3 laps don't go as good as they thought it was going to go, and that prevents it on that given day. I've seen the emotions of those days, and I've seen emotions of the successful flights as well. So I'm sure we've all been around varying degrees of excitement and heartbreak as it relates to the solo day, but it's supposed to be an exciting day. It is, you know, of all things aviation, well, I'd say maybe all things in life, there's only a few things that we do one time for the first time, you know, that is that monumental, right?
And right.
Everyone, much like you said, we all take check rides. We probably don't all know those dates, but we probably all remember that solo day very significantly. That may be the day we got a noise canceling headset for the first time. Something is big, like that. But, my day it was hot, man. I remember how hot it was. July 12th in Houston, Texas at sea level it's a hot, humid day. We do have a 7,000 foot runway here. So, there was no concerns for me, but I remember how hot it was. I remember I was counting down. There's number one. Number one crosswind, number one downwind, number one base, number two crosswind, one to go. I just remember, not that I wanted it to be over, but I wanted the accomplishment to happen, right? We talked a little bit about it. If you follow any of our social media pages for Behind the Prop, there is a banner image on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, all of our feeds. And that banner image is a picture of a Cessna kind of early evening. I mean, it's definitely still daylight. Sun's behind some clouds there. But that picture of that Cessna is me on my third supervised solo. And that's my third lap. And it to me, it's a distinguishing picture that says that's kind of the last time I had to be supervised. I had my solo ticket pretty much after that. I had my ability to fly cross countries with endorsements, but that instructor and I had done enough work to where I was able to really fly alone.
Yeah.
Of course, I had a lot of work to do, and I've come a long way since that day and learned a lot about aviation. But that picture on the banner of our social media feeds is my third supervised solo, and was probably a pretty important day, but it wasn't like the first time, right? And I think I go back to that first time. Before we start recording today, we talked about how many people do we think this year got their first time in. At this flight school, we do a lot of cool things. Wally talked about shirt tails. We'll talk about that next. But we give away a T-shirt for every student that does their first solo. And that T-shirt says Solo Day on it. It's got our logo. And on the back, it's got the cutout for the shirt tails. I think at the beginning of the year, I bought 250 of those shirts. And it's time to order some more. So I'm going to guess hundreds of first solos have happened at this flight school this year. You brought up, man, how cool would it be to know how many people soloed in all of our aircraft over the 33 years we've been in business. Wow, that would be a pretty cool stat.
Yeah.
And these planes have been around for a long time. Some of our planes have moved on to other places. But if you don't know where your aircraft is you soloed in, look in your logbook, find that tail number. A quick search on Google will probably bring up FlightAware and that tail number, and you'll be able to see where it was. I looked mine up before this podcast, and it was flying last week in Phoenix, Arizona. So it's moved on to a drier, higher, hotter climate probably. But if you don't know where your aircraft is or you're interested, go out there and look for the tail number on FlightAware. I'm sure you can find that aircraft somewhere in the world. So let's talk shirt tails. You said yours didn't get cut.
No.
Mine didn't get cut. I'd heard about it, not regularly around the school at the time, but I think I wore a shirt just in case that if it did get cut, I wasn't going to lose a good shirt, right?
Yeah.
And that's why we give one away, so that people don't cut their good shirts. You'd hate to wear a Tommy Bahama that day and cut that off, or maybe a brand new Columbia shirt. That might be bad. But we give that T-shirt away, and we want that as a keepsake. Do you know where that comes from, Wally?
Well, I just heard that it was the term was clipping of the tail feathers.
I've heard that. I've heard a lot of variations of where that comes from, but I looked it up in Wikipedia years ago when someone was asking why are y'all doing this? And Wikipedia, maybe not the best source in the world, but a good source, says that back in the early days when you would fly in a plane, you would be student in the front, instructor in the back, so more down the fuselage, not side by side, and that the instructor would pull your shirt tails to turn right, you'd pull the right side, turn left, and no intercoms, no radios, you're screaming at each other, the Wikipedia says that that's why you cut the shirt tails. So once you've soloed, you don't need your shirt tails anymore because your instructor doesn't have to guide where you're going to turn or go. Which I think is interesting. So somewhere between cutting your tail feathers and no longer needing your instructor in the back seat is why those shirt tails are cut. And it's a big deal. We cut that piece off, and we encourage instructors and students to write the date and tell whatever story they want to tell or whatever's on their mind. And we had an instructor probably within the last 6 months who I would advise all of you not to take that shirt tail and put it on the fuselage as you wrote your messaging. A Sharpie will go right through a T-shirt and onto the fuselage of a Cessna that's white, Wally, and that will stay there into perpetuity if you're not careful.
Oh, that's funny. So is it still on the airplane?
It is not. We've done a lot of research and found that if you use toothpaste with a little bit of water will get permanent marker off of an aircraft. So
that's good to know. Did that go in the logbook?
That did. Well, the solo went in the logbook, but not the time I spent cleaning the toothpaste. Now, we've all seen scared instructors coming and talking to the owners before, but that young man was a little nervous when he came in my door and said, I have a problem. I've written all over one of your aircraft with a Sharpie.
No, that's
completely
funny.
Incidental, but it was a funny story that day for sure.
That's funny. I know when I became a CFI and started soloing students, I wanted to make a bigger deal out of it than my instructor did. I still to this day, 39 years later, feel like I got a little shortchanged. But anyway, I'll get over it. The one thing that I realized, you know, teaching in Monroe, Louisiana, in the South, it's most of the time it's hot. So when I cut that first shirt, it's amazing how wet the shirt was with sweat. And I, you know, it's kind of like, oh boy, this is kind of gross, but I got over it real quick and learned what kind of permanent markers, did best on wet cotton, because that's usually what I was riding on. But it was always a fun thing to do with a student.
Speaking of that, you instructed for quite some time. What solo stories stick out to you as the instructor who, I ask all these instructors, was your first solo student that you signed off on and let leave the triangle, per se, was that a bigger day for you than your own solo? And some say, quite frankly, that it is, that's more nerve-wracking, that's a bigger deal. They've done so much to get to that point that's a big deal. Tell some of your solo student stories that you accomplished with your students.
I think it is a bigger deal. It's more nerve-wracking because it's when you cut them loose, it's totally out of your control. I remember the first times my daughters got in a car and drove away, much less, you know, of course they both have soloed as well, but you know, it's like, oh boy, did I cover everything? Did I remind them of this? And I had one student who, and I was listening to him talking to ATC on the radio, and so he took off, and for whatever reason, the tower asked him to ident, a little bit strange in the pattern. But anyway, he did. They said, I don't even remember the airplane number, but they said, you know, it was probably a Piper Tomahawk, and I'll just use the one that I sold, and Tomahawk 49 Alpha ident. And the student came back on the radio, Roger, Tomahawk 2549 Alpha. And then the controller said, 49 Alpha ident. And then he just came back and he said, Tomahawk 2549 Alpha. And then I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, we have not had the opportunity for me to teach him that there's this little button on the transponder that's an ident button, and the controller wants him to push the button, and the student just keeps giving the tail number back to the controller. So after this exchange goes on about three or four times, the controller finally says, son, there's a button on the transponder. It says ident underneath it. I want you to push that button. And you hear the student say, in a very nervous voice, yes, sir. Yes, sir. And he pushes the button. And of course, he came in, and as he got out of the airplane, he thought he was in trouble. And I had to calm him down, say, you know, it's fine. It's no big deal. That was my fault. That's an oversight on my part. But I think as an instructor, you're always thinking, okay, what if, what if, what if? And, you know, obviously the vast majority of student solos go just fine. We did have one instructor at the flight school that I was teaching at who had a student. And one thing that my father taught me was to never really let the student know that they're going to solo. Don't say, hey, tomorrow you're going to solo. Because, you know, you want them to just get a good night's sleep. You don't want them all up all night being nervous, that kind of stuff. But anyway, so I always subscribe to that. I always was very nonchalant about things. But anyway, this one instructor had evidently told his student that tomorrow he was going to solo. And the instructor drove up to the flight school, and he saw the truck that his student was driving parked in the parking lot. And he went in and he asked where his student was, and the people behind the front desk said, well, he got here 45 minutes ago and he got the keys to the airplane. And the instructor walked out and realized that his student was up there flying around in the pattern himself. without the proper endorsements and everything. And so he kind of freaked out, and the guy came in and landed, and he said, the instructor said, what did you just do? And he said, well, you told me I was going to solo tomorrow, so I soloed.
Better reason to even surprise him more.
Yeah, yeah. So it all turned out. Nobody got hurt or anything, and I'm not sure. I guess he at that point went in and made the proper endorsements to make what just happened legal. But anyway, so
I'm sure there's crazier stories than that.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I like to I spend a lot of time in the summers up in Alaska, flying trips up there, and they have a city tour, a bus tour that goes around Anchorage, and it goes out to the airport, and they talk a lot about aviation history. And one thing they like to say is that Alaska has 25,000 pilots, and 12,000 of them are actually licensed.
I've heard that a lot, that they learn to fly on their own up there, and many of them don't have a license, but they're really good pilots, and those bush pilots are probably better stick and rudder pilots than most of us.
Yeah.
In the wind, in the cold.
Right. Oof. Right.
So one thing we worked hard to do was to obviously share our stories on First Solos, but we thought that there would be no better thing to do than to interview a student on the show right after they got out of their solo. So we have Austin with us. Austin literally just came off the airfield. We're here at Hooks Airport, and Austin just did his first supervised solo. Austin, how are you feeling?
I'm doing great, Bobby. Thanks for asking.
Awesome. So Austin is working with a flight instructor here named Jacoby. Our process at United Flight Systems is for someone to fly three laps in the pattern with the student. Then the CFI does the infamous exit from the aircraft. And then the student pilot gets in, closes the door, buckles everything up, and then goes off for their supervised solo. So tell me a little bit about the thoughts that you were having this morning when you got up. You guys obviously had this planned. You knew today was going to be your solo day, hopefully, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So weather looked great. I was even checking it kind of religiously. We had done a night flight the night before, so I got home at about 11 and was checking the weather kind of religiously. Everything looked good. And then the morning when I woke up, everything looked great. Wind's calm. And I was thinking, not a better day. Just couldn't be a better day for it.
So what was the last METAR or the ATIS? What was the weather just a few minutes ago?
Yeah, so when we actually ended up going out, it was ended up being like 310 or 320 at 5 or 6 or 4 or 5. So it ended up just being just a little bit of a crosswind, which made things interesting.
That's good.
Keeps you awake in a sense. Yep. That early in the morning.
You do three laps with Jacoby. You guys are probably talking, and he's saying, "Great job." What was building as you did the first one, and you probably greased it, and you did the second
one? So I hadn't flown in about 18 or 19 days before that solo flight. So my first landing was a little rough, and I could hear him without him saying it, thinking, you can do better than that. So the next lap, I kept hearing him say, watch your airspeed. What speed should you be at? What speed should you be at? And once I started picking up on that, and I could hear him without him even saying it.
Yep.
The landings got better, and then the infamous dropout, like you said, taxi back to the triangle, and he hops out, and you're just kind of in your own world there.
Yeah. So I remember when I soloed, I guess it was July of 2015. I remember when my instructor got out. It wasn't really planned. We knew we were close to Bobby soloing, but that day I did not know he was planning on getting out, right? So it was kind of a, oh wow, this is really happening for me. It wasn't like I came in planning it, but when he got out, it seemed like that Cessna cockpit grew immensely. It was four times bigger than it was before. How empty did that cockpit feel?
It was, I'm a big guy, so for me, I'm very used to bumping into somebody in that cockpit, and you're 100% correct. You kind of feel almost naked.
You're like naked.
Where am I? What am I doing here? Should I even be here? Am I ready for this type question?
Yep.
And I had every bit of that. My uncle's been a pilot since 2006. I did a lot of the training with him when I was, 9 or 10 years old. So I've always been in the cockpit with somebody. I've always kind of had that fail safe, especially not being PIC.
Yep.
And then, he steps out and you're just kind of like,
here we go.
Yeah. Where am I? And then it almost became natural. You key up the radio, get that taxi clearance to go up to 17 right at Charlie. And everything from there, just like a ball rolling downhill, you got better and better and better.
And we have some great controllers here. They are very aware of the fact that you just had a CFI get out of the aircraft.
Yeah.
So they're probably taking care of you with white gloves, and they do a great job around here. But you get to Charlie, and you're holding short for that first time. The other thing that I remember kind of at that moment was there's no one to ask a question to.
Mm-mm.
Jacoby has a radio in his hand, but you're probably not going to ask him a question on the radio.
No.
And I think I became a better pilot because of that, almost instantaneously.
Yeah, and I can agree with that. There was at least one situation where I thought I would ask him for this, but then I said, you know what? It's sink or swim. You need to make those decisions on your own. He's not going to be there to hold your hand forever.
And the other radio work, the being there listening for my tail number, I knew that he wasn't going to be there to pick up if I missed the radio call. So I'm just listening much better than I was before, I think. But I did a lot of talking to myself. Did you talk to yourself in the plane?
Yeah, I definitely did in that very beginning. And then that first takeoff came and, you know, we had a negative 1800 DA. So climbing was already awesome. But, you know, when you're removing 200 pounds from the plane, I had no idea it was going to climb as hard as it did. I kind of froze up for a second once it was getting to about traffic pattern altitude. And I remembered I need to be doing something. I need to be talking to myself. I need to just be saying what I'm doing. And as soon as I thought about that, it was just like you said, nonstop talking, just making sure if there was somebody in that passenger seat, they're not getting a word in edgewise.
Yep. And I remember, I think it was probably my third lap. I took off and I was like, I'm almost done. I got to do one more. And the feeling of accomplishment, like this isn't learning how to play badminton or something, right? We all have a little bit of fear of the unknown. We all have a lot of work to do. There's a lot to learn about flying an airplane. What were you feeling when you were wrapping up your third lap? I mean, this has to be a big accomplishment.
Yeah, I was honestly, my biggest thought going through my head was, I want to grease this landing and say to myself, like, I finally had one of the best landings possible. And I don't think I had the best landing I possibly could have made of myself yet, but it was to the date one of the best I've had, and that felt even better. That compounded on top of the accomplishment.
So today's the day. You're now a solo pilot in command pilot. That's a big accomplishment. Hopefully you'll solo many more times and get all of your work out of the way, and then you'll be ready for a check ride. Who do you think you'll use for your check ride? Do you have any ideas?
No, I honestly don't. I tend to think about things only a couple days ahead. So me and Jacoby have just been discussing, you know, what's the shortest next steps as far as getting the cross country done and all that. And when it comes to the check ride, I'm just going to tell him, whoever you think, I trust you immensely.
Perfect. I'm kind of picking on you a little bit since my podcast partner here, Wally, might be available for you. Austin, I appreciate you joining the show, and I appreciate you being a student at United Flight Systems.
Yeah, thanks. No problem at all. And if I could, I'd like to say a huge shout out to you guys first and foremost, you know, letting us do this. You don't have to. And second thing, Jacoby has been quite possibly the best thing I could have ever asked for.
Awesome.
As far as personality types, he gels very well with me, and he's an incredibly nice guy. So,
well, if you're listening to this podcast and you want to fly with Jacoby sometime, check out our website, unitedflight.com/crew, and read more about Jacoby. We look forward to seeing you at the flight school, and Austin, we look forward to seeing you back at the flight school very soon.
Thanks, Bobby, and you have a great day.
Wally, that's so fun to hear how much fun and excitement is in that person's voice right when they get out of that plane. It might have been 40 years ago for you, but I'm sure you can resonate with how exciting that must be to do that first solo for that young man.
Definitely. That's, you know, as an examiner, I tell a lot of my applicants that it's my honor. It's a privilege to get to be a part of a real important date for them, earning a certificate, whether private, commercial, or whatever. For me to get to witness it is just very, very heartwarming for me. It's just a privilege to be able to be a part of that. And being at a flight school, you know, every day like you are, just to be able to see somebody walk in from the first solo has got to be, just got to make you feel pretty good.
It's awesome. I love to see it happen. I love to see the pictures. I love to post the pictures. There's not too many people frowning in their first solo picture.
Right.
So that makes it even more exciting to be around that all day.
Right.
As we wrap up the show, what What suggestions would we give the listeners, assuming we have a lot of listeners that are going to their first lesson today, thinking about getting into flight training? What kind of tips, tricks would we give them around their first solo or getting through that stage of education and training to where they're going to approach that first solo time frame?
You know, back when I soloed, I was in a college situation and lots of 18, 19-year-old, at the time, mostly males. There were a couple of females, and fortunately, the scale is tilting to where it's more even. But back in the day, at least where I was, there was a lot of competition, and it was like, oh, well, I soloed in this many hours. Well, I soloed in this many hours. Of course, you wanted to solo in the least number of hours, and it was a badge of honor. And I will tell you, where you solo, I think, means absolutely nothing in the big scheme of things.
Yep.
I've seen people solo at 75 hours. I've seen people solo at 5.5 hours. And the end result, really means nothing. So
the next few ratings,
right?
Private still takes 40, no
right.
matter what. If
right.
you if you're a part of 61 student,
right?
Doesn't matter if you solo to 5 or 39,
right?
I think the instrument still has a set number of requirements that you have to take, no
right.
matter when you soloed.
Right.
Commercial has a number of hours of cross country and mm-hmm. flight designations you have to do dual, no matter when you soloed. So,
right.
I as the flight school owner, I talk to parents who are frustrated sometimes that Johnny's not there yet, and we talk through the reasons why he's not there yet. But it is such a small window of time. You know, I, as a flight school owner, it is a pretty risky time for students to do it. We have some pretty strict rules around it for students to protect them, because not everyone makes the best decision all the time. But, you know, if you think about a solo student, the way I do, or if you're a solo student, you're out there and you're thinking, man, I'm not there yet, or I'm struggling, or the weather keeps keeping me on the ground, this sucks. We've probably all had those days.
Yeah.
But if you're at 20, let's just call it 20 to 25 hours is probably when the large majority of students solo for the first time. And you're at 20, 25 hours, and you want to be a professional pilot in some form or another. 25 to 40 is 15 hours. Of 1,000-hour pilot time, before, I mean, you can't even go to the airlines without 1,000 hours as a restricted ATP. We're talking less than 1.5%
right.
of your overall flight time before you go to the airlines is right. that window between solo and private pilot's license.
Right.
And I try to tell people in the front foyer all the time that the winds are too strong and they can't go do their long cross country. This is a small, small window of time.
Right.
It too will pass. Like,
right.
It's a big deal to you today, and I get it. It's a big deal for me today. But let's let this 1.5% of your training
right.
extend a little bit longer to be right. safe, right?
Right.
And I can't stress that enough for anyone out there. My story has become to these students and to you, if you're listening, find a reason why you shouldn't go. Stick to that. Instead of sitting up front or at a computer trying to find a reason why you can go.
Right.
It's hard, but it's what professional pilots do.
Right.
Finding the reason why you're not going to go is so much more pro than finding a reason that you could sneak it in and go.
Yeah.
So that's my message to all you current, future solo students out there. It's such a small window of time. Be patient, follow the rules, and learn as much as you can, because it's going to be a short period of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, with that, as always, we will ask you to fly safe, be safe, and stay behind the prop. Thanks for listening to Behind the Prop.
Bravo Tango Papa, we are clear of the active runway and would like to taxi to park.
Bravo Tango Papa, taxi to park. Great show. Have a nice day.
Taxi to park. Thanks. You too. Bravo Tango Papa.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Prop. Please follow us on social media at Behind the Prop. Or visit our website, www.behindtheprop.com. Until next week, fly safe, everyone.